Hello everyone, this is Factoring In, a podcast on culture, media and literature. My name is Gautam Chesurya. I'm a management consultant based out of Delhi. Today I'm going to discuss about a book that I've recently read. The book's title is Sapiens, A Brief History of Humankind by Yuval Noah Harari. I was really interested in knowing about the book, and once I read it, I was completely blown away by the information it provided, by challenging what I believed in, and I like to share a few things with you. So what I'm going to do today is to share 7 reasons why you should read this book. Okay, without wasting any time, I'm just straight away going into the 7 reasons. The number one reason is, it debunks the existing anthropological theories. Okay, so what are the theories that you usually believe in when it comes to human evolution? Number one is that humans evolved in a linear fashion, which is from Neanderthals, you reach Homo sapiens, and Homo sapiens have evolved to become a present day man. But that's not essentially the case, which the author proves that multiple human species have existed at the same time, and it is possible that these species have either replaced each other to become the present day modern human being, or they interbred with each other and to give rise to an entirely new species, which is Homo sapiens as we see it right now. So this is something that author tries to establish, and this is one of the theories he debunks. The other theory that he debunks is that agriculture as a practice was not a leap forward for humanity. It was something that was assumed to be good for a long time, but it is the evidences later prove that the forager way of life that existed before agriculture was more nutritious than agriculture way of life, because when humans were foraging, they used to get a lot of variety food rather than agriculture, which was restricted to a few staple grains. So this sort of restricted the growth of the human brain and overall health of the human body. And by adopting agriculture, what the other consequence was that the breast milk which was given to babies, the female members of the family was not involved in any hard labor while they were foraging, as opposed to agriculture, where they were involved in agriculture production, which reduced their time in attending to babies. So when they had reduced time in giving breast milk to the babies. So it added to the fact that the babies was also not getting the right nutrition because they were not getting access to breast milk. And the other issues like the permanent settlement in a particular land owing to agriculture brought in a lot of diseases to the humankind. And the hard labor that agriculture demanded caused a lot of body ailments to the human body, which they were not used to when compared to a forager way of life. And not to mention that the domesticated animals, their life became very, very miserable once agriculture started, as opposed to them roaming freely in the wild. So in essence, what agriculture did was it kept people alive. It killed more people alive than what used to be in forager way of life, but it kept alive people in worse conditions. So you may ask, what is the one final conclusion that we can get? Agriculture is a product of humanity's search for easier life. So that is one thing that we can conclude from what agriculture was and what kind of conclusion we should take from it. And the second reason why you should read the book is that it introduced the idea of imagined realities. Now this is a term which could be unknown to a lot of people, but once I start explaining, it seems very simple to you, very commonsensical to you. For any human creation that we know right now, any intangible human creation that we know right now, is based on human imagination. So anything that is based on human imagination, that is superimposed on a biological reality, is called a imagined reality. For example, any religion, any form of government, any legal right are considered to be imagined realities. These are all products of human mind. And these are products of human mind that are embedded in material world. So mind you, everything will have a biological backing, but on top of it, it'll be like a layer which is a product of human imagination. It can extend to the hierarchies of caste, class, race, gender, everything. So it's an interesting observation that all this platforms of discrimination, that is hierarchy of caste, class, race, and gender are have arisen out of imagined realities, but now justified based justified on the basis of chance occurrences in historical events. So these do not have biological backings, is what I'm trying to say. It is also important to note that all the languages and scripts in this world have arisen from a need to document these imagined realities. For example, the accounting, something as simple as an accounting book or accounting book of a company is imagined from an imagined reality that a company, an entity that is a creation of human mind exists, and because of which you need a language to support its existence. So this is the second reason the author introduced imagined realities as an integral part of human evolution. The third reason why you should read is the revelations on how and why the prehistoric man has influenced the modern man, the legacies that the prehistoric man has left for modern man. So the number one legacy that he identifies is that of the binge eating. So what is binge eating? Binge eating is something that we do when we consume a lot of food more than what is necessary of us. So how did it take shape? Primarily because in the prehistoric times, we did not have enough food supply for us. So whenever we had food in plenty. We did not take into consideration whether we had food or whether we had enough or not. We just had to have as much as possible so that when a difficult time comes in, we will have enough fat in our body and then we can use our fat to survive. So this was the logic behind that. So that DNA, that particular gene got ingrained in the human DNA, and it still continues even now, which is manifested in a way that, you know, when we go to restaurants, we will binge eat and we will end up having more than what we require. So this is something that has passed on from the prehistoric man's legacy. Now the second point is, which is again one very common thing around us, which is the infidelity in marriages. So we could, the data and the research proves that marriages around us at a global scale are ending up in divorce more than it used to be. So what could be the reason? One of the main reasons is the infidelity or unfaithfulness. So why is this? Because in earlier days, which is prehistoric days, man used to not be restricted in marriages which are monogamic in nature. It is doubtful even a concept called marriages exist, but whatever sexual relationship existed, it was polygamous in nature. So polyandry and polygamy was common, and it used to give rise to a set of two parenthood, parenthood which is based on mother and father, but multiple parents. So this is something that prehistoric man has left for the modern man, the idea of infidelity. Now the fourth reason why you should read the book is on Horne's take on political theories. So he believes that none of the political theories are completely based on scientific principles. So take up any theory you want, be it democracy, be it capitalism, be it communism, be it Nazism, none of these theories are based on scientific facts. Everything is based on non-scientific principles, such as let's take the example of liberal progressive ideology, which is basically saying that whatever man has a unique worth of his own, and there is nothing that should restrict man's actions. He is free to do whatever he wants. Now the problem with this is that the fundamental premise that a man has a unique worth of his own and is special is not proven by a biological fact. It is a political or a social assumption which is not proven by a scientific fact. A similar thing goes for other political theories also, for example, Nazism. Nazism's one of the fundamental tenets is that a particular race is superior than the other race, which is again not backed by biological facts. Although political theories are not backed by scientific principles, it is not necessarily the other way around. Science needs politics to survive. Science needs politics to survive because none of the scientific principles would have taken place and would have grown popular without the backing of political powers. So as if we observe through the chapters of history, it is very much evident that all the imperial projects, be it British Empire, be it French Empire, Dutch Empire, take any empire that have expanded across continents, it is clear that they were backed by a quest for knowledge, quest for scientific knowledge, which provided them with the practical knowledge, technology, and ideological justification for imperial conquest. So it is very important to know that politics are not always based on science, but science would need politics more. So this is some conclusion that we can come to. And coming to the fifth reason why you should read this book is money. His take on money is that money is the most efficient system of mutual trust and universal, and it's the most easily convertible universal currency in the world. So now, why he would say that is because money, we all know, has no intrinsic value, but it has the potential to challenge the most intangible values that we believe in. Values such as honor, royalty, morality, and love all are challenged by love. All are challenged by money. So essentially, money is based on the mutual trust of an unknown stranger. That this, if you exchange this paper, I would get in exchange exchange goods and services of that much value. So the whole idea is it is driving our world to become a heartless marketplace. So this is something that author is trying to convey, and it's a very unique and important learning that we have to embrace. The sixth point is that of why you should read the book is that of culture. The author says that there are no authentic cultures left in the world. Everything is globalized, and
culture that would consist of economic, social, legal, scientific, and geopolitical systems have all merged together to form a universal platform. Which means you can't differentiate an economic system or a geopolitical system or a legal system between countries and find large differences. So this has been a result of a globalization process, and how it came to be. Imperial forces of empires has assimilated multi-ethnic cultures onto themselves. For example, Roman culture or Assyrian culture or Greek culture, all these have brought in multi-ethnic cultures into itself, and it has formed a unique culture of its own. So and this legacy can be seen in the case of languages also, where at this, if you notice, all the popular languages we right now speak are imperial languages, be it English, be it Spanish, be it Arabic, any language, be it French, any language that is considered to be universal are all result of imperial dominance. Now the last and final point, which is like a summation of the whole message that the author is trying to send, is that history is not natural and inevitable. Most of the times we see history as something that leads to the progression of the man, inevitably lead to the progress of the man. Every historical event is culminating in man's progress, but it is not that the case. The author backs it up by evidence, saying that history is, if you theorize history is like a chaotic event, which changes every time you try to predict it. It's like an event. If you try to predict in a way that, you know, this is going to happen in the future, once the information is out, people will respond to the information, and people will make sure that information doesn't happen, and history will never ever follow that prediction of yours. Which is very much visible in the case of financial markets, that if you are going to predict a certain thing in the market, the chances are likely that the market will respond to that prediction, and most of the times that prediction will never happen. So once again, to conclude, history, we have to understand that history is not necessarily human-centric. Those are just events that happen, and events that could not necessarily be directed to the well-being of human beings. Thank you for listening. This has been my first podcast, so I thank you all for having the patience to listen to me. I hope this podcast is interesting. I will be doing more such podcasts on the books I'm going to read, movies I'm going to watch, and the blogs I'm going to read. So stay tuned. Factoring is going to be